Continuing in mitzvah Reish Mem Dalet 244, not to crossbreed animals. So what's going on exactly with that? We saw before that basically the reasoning that Sefer Chinuch presents is that basically God liked the world the way he created it. We don't need to mess around with it too much. We don't need to make new species of animals that involve crossbreeds, such as mules, right, for example. That's the most common example of something that's a crossbreed of different species. Obviously, they're related enough that they can produce offspring, but not related enough they can produce fertile offspring, which is the biological definition of species. But the halachic definition of species has nothing to do with producing fertile offspring. It's just anything that's defined halachically as two different species, which is a little bit arbitrary, it seems to us, as we'll see in a few minutes.
How are species defined?
In the Torah? By similar characteristics. You'll see in a few minutes. It doesn't give clear guidelines. It's more just, these things are different species, these things are the same species. It's hard to pinpoint exact guidelines and rules for exactly what's going on. Midini amitzo, what are the halachas? Masham rezichonam devracha, the lav davke behema levad, he beisr zeh. So the pasuk, when it talks about interbreeding animals, it says, not to crossbreed behema. So what's a behema? A behema in rabbinic Hebrew is a technical term, meaning a domesticated animal. A behema in biblical Hebrew does not have the technical meaning yet. So it just means an animal, basically. So the terms behema and chaya, which in rabbinic Hebrew means a wild animal, are basically interchangeable in rabbinic Hebrew. In biblical Hebrew. Sometimes Chazal darshan the biblical Hebrew in consonants with the rabbinic Hebrew, as happens many times. But basically, in terms of the basic meaning, the terms behema and chaya are interchangeable in the Chumash. Ela afilu chaya ve'of. So we saw that one time, remember, in Kisui Hadam. We talked about the covering of the blood. So the pasuk says that if you shecht a chaya or a bird, then you have to do kisui adam. So Chazal say in that case, it does specifically refer to a wild animal or a bird. It does not refer to a domesticated animal. And the commentaries say that it's because the only thing that can be used for a korban is a behemoth. So with an animal that can be used for a korban, you don't need the extra reminder of kisui adam, that you're taking a life. They say, but that's one example where it doesn't mean, though there's a discussion in the Gemara about it, where it doesn't mean that you have to cover the blood of a behema also, specifically a wild animal or a bird. But here, the word behema does not mean just a domesticated animal. Ela filu chaya ve'of kol she'ir bi'an b'she'enan minan loka. That is an absolute biblical violation to the extent that you get the penalty of lashes if you interbreed a wild animal or a bird.
Even if it were like the same, same species, like, wild horse and.
Oh, excellent point. Ooh. So we'll see in a second, which says that an ox and a wild ox are not kilayim. So what does that mean? What exactly is a wild ox? Don't know exactly
like
what the.
A buffalo. I mean,
Probably not. Ra'im might be a buffalo. Whatever it is, but these exact terms. So here you have. We're getting ahead of ourselves, but you're right.
There, an ox is just a domesticated ox. Now that you take a wild ox and you tame it.
No, what do you mean? An ox is domesticated, but there's a wild ox that.
Can you domesticate a wild ox and make him just an ox?
Well, domesticated cattle are descendants of it's called an aurochs, I think. Right. That was originally. There was a wild type of cow, so maybe that's what it's talking about. But they're extinct now. The wild aurochs. So it's not maybe I don't remember exactly when they went extinct. So have to figure it out. It could be that's what they're talking about. But yeah, you'll see in a minute that it's very unclear. So it refers also to chaya. Oh, fine. But feel here, ba behema o chaya b'mine chaya shebayam loke alehen. It refers also to interbreeding, or again, it doesn't refer to producing offspring, but in terms of forcing them to mate with each other. So this prohibition applies also to the types of animals living in the sea. What does it mean, an animal living in the sea? Whales, dolphins, things like that. That
fish.
Have that, what?
Not fish.
Well, fish don't, the thing that Minchas Lina points out, that it's not really shayach by fish, because fish reproduce in a different way. A lot of times the female lays in eggs on the floor of the body of water where they're spawning, and then the male deposits the sperm on top of the eggs, and the conception takes place outside externally. But they're animals.
Ah, so this was all understood. So it was understood that whales and dolphins and whatever.
Yeah, sure. So, but whales and dolphins reproduce.
Birds don't do it like fish. Birds are more like
mouse. Right.
Birds. They make eggs and like, they sit on they have eggs. And
right, but they fertilize inside the body of the gestation takes place outside the female's body.
But the fertilization.
But the fertilization takes place inside. So that's why it only talks, obviously, it only, this prohibition can only be shayach for animals that reproduce when a man or where the conception takes place inside the body of the female. Otherwise, it's not shayach, because the whole prohibition is inserting the male member inside the female. That's the entire prohibition of the... and that's the entire prohibition of Revi over here. Bechad behema chayv of shelo shel chaver lo kelein. So it doesn't matter if you own them or not. Then you still receive the biblical penalty of Malkus. Why would you think you wouldn't? Because it says, Behem techa lo sarbi akilayim. You shall not interbreed your animal. So it says, no, that's lav dafka. It just means in general. So behema, you all people, Jewish people, you shouldn't interbreed your animals. Umashamru shemutter lahachnis shnei minin lesahar echad. But what you are allowed to do is you put a horse and a donkey in a corral together, and you give the donkey nice perfume, and make sure it's dressed very nice, and you make it very attractive to the horse, and hope that something's going to happen over here. So in that case, that is in fact allowed. That's only the biblical prohibition, as we said, is only when you put the mascara brush in the mascara tube, when you actually physically, put it inside and you cause them to mate very directly.
That's midrashah. What about
midrabanan? He's going to say in the very end, I don't know, he doesn't mention over here, I think. Yes, he mentioned, I'll mention it again over here, is that even if you pick up the male and you put it very close to the female and you're pretty sure what's going to happen, that's derabanan. So you have three levels. Deraisa is only if you insert. Derabanan is if you take it and you put it right on top of the other animal and assuming something's going to happen. And what's mutter is if you just put them together in the same area and you hope that they're going to mate and produce offspring.
Artificial insemination is going to be a big problem. Because you're the one who's actually doing the insertion.
At least they're abundant. Midaraisa, you...
I
mean, it could be... It's a good question. I have to look into it more. But it could be that midaraisa, you still wouldn't be chayav midaraisa, even though here you're really inserting the semen of one animal into the other animal. But it could be that the daraisa is only when it's done through the natural means. So if you're assisting the natural means, that's a daraisa. But that would certainly be us, or at least midarabanan. Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, most of the time they do artificial insemination, it's with the same species, like racehorses and stuff like that. That's completely fine.
What about artificial insemination for human beings?
What about it?
Well, is that included in the prohibition?
That's another topic.
Well, that's two humans. It's the same species.
I'm firmly convinced that males and females are different species. a wise friend of mine says, no, different nationalities.
I mean, there are definitely shilas in terms of artificial insemination that come up. In terms of how do you get the sperm sample is a problem because of the issue of wasting seed. But I mean, basically, it's mutter because it's obviously eventually leading to hopefully conception. But the question is, it's still not so pashut. It's not so pashut to give a straight heter for that. And also, if the two people who are having the artificial insemination are not married, then you have a problem also that if a woman wants to have, let's say, a couple is trying to have children for a long time, and it's determined that the problem lies with the man. So then the woman says, well, why should I suffer? I want to raise children together with my husband so he can have children, so I want to have artificial insemination with another man, a different man. So is that allowed or not?
Yeah, that's the question.
But they also, they also have ways of, collecting the husband's stuff. And
no, I was saying if he's sterile, if the husband...
He's totally sterile.
Yeah, right. Well, obviously, if it's the married couple, so you're it's much better. Obviously, you get yourself into a lot of problems. This is the famous machlokas between Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Sadmar Rav that they really attacked Rav Moshe Feinstein for this. That the Sadmar Rav felt that a child who was conceived with a married woman and the sperm of a man who was not her husband was a mamzer, and Rav Moshe Feinstein felt that that's not true. Because part of the definition of a mamzer is that the creation of the mamzer has to be through a prohibited sexual act, which is obviously not taking case over here. And the accepted opinion is like Rav Moshe Feinstein. I mean, I mean, Poskim will not recommend this necessarily. I mean, it's a very, again, it's a very sensitive thing, and you have to figure out if people are having fertility problems, what the best way to go about solving it is. That's not, it's a very, very complicated issue, but basically we rely on Rav Moshe Feinstein that if they went ahead and did it, with or without rabbinical consent, that the child would not be a mamzer. It's a very, very... It's also better if in certain situations, again, it could be that if the sperm comes from a non-Jew, then that might be better, because mamzerus is only shayach when it's two Jews doing the prohibition.
But there must be other consent.
So here the mother's Jewish, so it's... It's a very, very difficult child.
His genetic and social grandparents are not Jewish. Is that a good thing?
That's a big shala. That's a big problem of whether it's really advisable to do such a thing. No, but you're right. It's very, very difficult as to whether you want to do that. These are very, very difficult shalas to the extent that Rav Schechter told a very, humbling story. So he says that rabbis nowadays, you know, they'll get asked questions. And they expect, first of all, the Baal Batim don't give them, Baruch Hashem, but and the Baal Batim don't give any time to learn. So some rabbis every day of the week, they're running from Levaya to wedding to bris to there's no time for rabbis to learn. Yet they expect that the rabbis are going to answer the most complex shilas right on the spot. So certain shilas, you know, Reb Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, one of the Posek Hador, the Gadol Hador right before World War II. So he said that, Shechter says, so these shilas that, I think he quoted from the Rav, that these shailas that it would take Reb Chaim Ozer, he would cloister himself in his room for a week and try to figure out the answer and write to other Rabbanim, and it would take him, right, so they expect answers right on the spot. He said somebody used, there was a woman once, who maybe more than once, called Rav Soloveitchik, before Reb Moshe Feinstein published his psak, and called Reb Soloveitchik and said, you know, I can't have children, can I do artificial insemination, or will the child be a mamzer? So Soloveitchik said, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. It's a very difficult question. So then eventually, this happened many times, so he didn't know the answer. He's one of the biggest rabbis alive at the time, obviously. So when Rav Moshe Feinstein came out with his psak, he said he used to see, he would answer callers who asked that question by saying, Rav Moshe Feinstein already said that it's not a mamzer, so let's not think about it anymore. Let's just rely on him. Which is very, very interesting. But obviously, artificial insemination by animals is much more is much easier to permit it than by humans. It's really, really very difficult. Masha Amru. Okay, so you're allowed to put the two in a corral together, and when they are out of other options. So I remember my biology teacher in ninth grade. I said, well, why would a horse want to mate with a donkey? So she answered, well, you put the horse and the donkey alone in the room for a while with no one else around, and eventually the donkey starts to look pretty good. That was her answer.
This is part of a technical question.
Yeah.
The horse and the donkey. Does it matter which one is the male? Or the female, or do they both produce a mule or?
Yes, I think there's a technical hinny. Maybe that makes sense. Hinny. Yeah. One is when, when the father is a horse, one is when the mother is a horse. I don't remember exactly, offhand, which is which. Okay. Vim revozez ein zokuk lehafrishan. And if they start to go at it on their own, then you don't have to separate them. Masha Amru, I wouldn't advise separating a horse at that moment anyway. I might kick you in the face. Not a good idea. Masha Amru... So you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it for you. As in general, this is one of you'll see in other issues of kilayim. Sometimes it's not as stringent when a goy does it for you, but here he's not allowed. So if you want a mule you're not allowed to go to your goyish neighbor and say, you know, here are my two animals. I really like to have a mule. Hmm, you know, a little help here, like a Shabbos goy. So that you're not allowed to do.
But are you allowed to buy one from a...
Oh, we'll get there in a second. The chen ma sh'amru shemisha avar, literally, right next thing, right the next thing. Me sh'amru shemisha avar v'hirkiv b'she'eno mino. If you did go ahead and you did the harkava, even again the direct derisa way where you actually insert it and cause them to have relations on your own, hanolin man mutar hu ba'ana uvachila. So that you're allowed b'di'evid, you went ahead and did it. You bred interbred the two animals, so you're allowed to have a benefit from the animals, and you're allowed to eat it. Obviously, both parents have to be kosher species, because we know that kosher and non-kosher species won't interbreed anyway. But if that's the case, then you're allowed to eat it. So there's no prohibition, b'di'evid, at all. So you're allowed to buy a mule, you're allowed to work with a mule, all these types of things. V'chol shehen shnei minin b'chlal iser zeh. Anything that's two different species is part of this prohibition. Afal pisha domin zeh lezeh. They could be similar, but they still halachically be considered different species. What does that mean? V'chol shein min echad, afal pisha echad midbari ve'echad yishuvi mutarin. So, it says, if they're one species, even though that one lives wild and one lives with humans, so it's mutar. So again, what exactly the definition is a little bit unclear. There is that says in the Yerushalmi that shore with an ox with a wild ox is not kilayim. Aval avaz habar v'avaz yishuvi einan beheter zeh. But a wild goose and a domesticated goose are not one species for because of this criteria which I'm about to say. Lefi shehen shnei minin, the two different species. Shai yishuvi beitzav mi bifnim v'hamidbari mi bachutz. A domesticated goose has internal testicles, and the wild goose, the one that lives in the desert, has external testicles. Again, so that one little thing makes it different species. You'd think that wild ox also have different things, but it has to have some different physical characteristic, I guess. But again, the definition is not so clear. But apparently, this is a feature of these different types of birds. I remember I was in a restaurant in Israel once, and I looked at the menu, and one of the things on the menu was, it said, Beitzei Hodu. So I said, oh, turkey eggs. That's right. Interesting. That's that's something you don't get in America very much. You know, so they have chicken eggs occasionally, see duck eggs, but turkey eggs never. You know, that's very interesting. So then I looked, and there was an English side of the menu, and it said turkey testicles. Oh. I said, because beitzim is eggs is a Hebrew euphemism for testicles that we just saw with the wild goose.
So how would you say, turkey eggs?
Be the same thing.
Same word.
Yeah, it's ambiguous. It's ambiguous.
Well, there are words in English that mean one thing in regular conversation and mean another thing.
Yeah, but here it's the exact same phrase. There's no other way to say it. I mean, there is a technical word for testicle, eshech. Oh. But there's no, the euphemistic word is the same. So it's, anyway. I didn't know that birds had... testicles that way that you could eat them and whatever. Right. Okay. Very, very interesting. This. So if you're ever in Israel, try to look for these exotic things. The akoi is an animal that is, we're not sure whether it's a domesticated or a non-domesticated animal. So we have to go stringently in both directions. So if you shecht akoi, so...
What is it?
That's a good question. I don't think it's exactly 100% clear. Different suggestions have been given, but any animal really that's not sure whether it's a domesticated or a non-domestic or a wild animal, so it has to go in stringently for both directions. So, for example, if you shecht one, then you have to do kisui hadam because it might be a chaya, might be a wild animal, but you're also not allowed to eat the chelev, the forbidden fats, because it might be a behemah. So a chaya, if you shecht a deer, you have a lot less work than if you shecht a cow in some ways, because though you have to take out the gid anosha, you have all the forbidden fats. You can eat every single piece of fat in the animal.
In the deer.
Right. Oh. Whereas it's a lot of work to remove the forbidden fats from domesticated animals. So it's just interesting that nowadays pretty much all that's on the kosher market is domesticated animals. So it would be a lot less work for the butcher if they if they could shack
wild animals. That's the deer.
You have to catch the deer in order to shack it. You can't shoot it.
Right.
So it's a little harder.
That is the difficult part of getting deer
raising.
Oh, deer farms are.
I don't know if they call them farms, but yeah, I remember. Never mind. That was just a restaurant in New York that was whatever. I don't know. Whole.
There is kosher venison occasionally. You see it, but
and bison too.
Bison's a Shiloh. Bison's a Suffolk. But deer is for sure a Chaya.
Bison is a Shiloh.
Yeah, whether it should be considered a Chaya or a Behemoth. So they treated it stringently in both ways also when they chef bison.
Once they domesticate them to the point where they
can... No, it goes by the species. It doesn't go by whether they're actually living in a farm or whether they're living in the woods.
But I mean, at what point does the wolf become a dog?
It has to change to different species, right?
Yeah.
So now, right, the cattle, domesticated cattle are clearly a different... species from a wild aurochs. That koi, kilayim habema v'achaya. So not allowed to breed a koi with a behema or a chaya. So it has to be something that obviously a type of behema or a type of chaya that you might think is similar enough that would be the same species. But ordinarily, why would you think it would even be the same species that you have be able to interbreed it at all? It's a little bit strange, but. Anyway, in other words, the koi is a suffix, you have to treat it stringently. The ain lokin alav mipneishu suffix. But if, nevertheless, if you did interbreed it with a species that was similar enough, then you would not receive the penalty of lashes, whether the species with which you interbreeded it was a behema or a chaya, because since there's a doubt, so you don't receive the penalty of lashes if there's a doubt. Uve inyan iser zeh. So Sefer HaChinuch says that regarding this prohibition, hakol holech achar. Ha'aim. It goes by the mother. Just like being Jewish. She'ein choshishin lezera ha'av. That there is a whole discussion in the Gemara as to whether, regarding animals, you're concerned for the patrilineal lineage or not. So Sefer Chinuch says here, he holds that, he paskins that he'ein choshishin lezera ha'av. You're not concerned yourselves with the patrilineal lineage at all. So this is the opinion of the Rif. And according to this... Yeah. So according to this, if you have, let's say, a mule where the mother was a... where both parents were a donkey, I'm sorry, and you have... then it's a donkey, not a mule. So if you have a purebred donkey... and you have a mule where the, or whatever, henny, whatever it's called, where the mother is a donkey and the father is a horse, then those two progeny you would be allowed to interbreed, right?
Although the mule is going to be sterile, no?
Right.
Okay, yes, okay. Technicalities.
In a case that, yeah.
Right. So if you have such a thing where, so even if, let's say, one animal is a purebred, one animal has a father of a different species, halachic species, then according to the Rif, you'd be allowed to interbreed them because they'd be considered halachically the same because in terms of descendants, it only goes after the mother. V'yesh mefarshim acherim. There are other authorities who say, shepasko ki mipneishin istapku binyan zeh b'gemara. There's not a clear conclusion in the Gemara. Im choshishin lezer ha'avo ein choshishin. Az linan bey lechumra... le'olam. So you have to go stringently. What does that mean? So if you have an animal where you interbred two different species, and I'm just going to use the horse and donkey example because people are familiar with that. Okay, they can't have, they're sterile, yes, but assuming you can reply it to other species that might not be sterile. So let's say you have a mule, let's say you have the father donkey mother horse, and you have another animal, father donkey mother horse. So you have those two progeny, so you're allowed to interbreed them? Yes, because no matter how you look at it, whether you're worried about the Zerahav or not, so they're the same, because the father and mother are respectively the same species.
The offspring are the same, because they...
Right, so those you would be allowed to interbreed.
Right, got it.
But if you have a species where one is purebred and the other has a foreign father... then according to the Rif, you would be allowed to interbreed them, but according to the way the Sefer HaChinuch conclusion, you would not be allowed to interbreed them because one is a crossbreed, one is a purebred, even though one is the father, so you are worried about the father's lineage. And similarly, if let's say you have the same two species that are interbred, but one, the mother is a... Let's say the mother... But you switch it with the two progeny, the two pairs. So one, the mother is one species and the father is one species, but in the other one you switch it, that the father is the same species of the mother, and the other one of the father, you switch it. You get what I'm saying? So then if those two have progeny, then according to the Rif, it's for sure you're not allowed to do that, and you get Malkus. But according to the other one, it would just be a suffix, because the mice, it's a combination, but we're not sure whether we're Choshesh Lezera Ha'av or not. Mm-hmm. So you go according to the other Shita, either you have to have the mother and father being the same in order to be allowed to interbreed the offspring. Mm. Okay. Ulinyan Osov Esbino. So now he's introducing a different mitzvah. This is not part of this mitzvah that we're currently discussing, but there is a prohibition, as we know, of Osov Esbino Lo Sishchatu B'yom Echad. We're not allowed to shecht the parent animal and the baby animal on the same day. So this really applies to the female animal, right? Because the female, even though it says oso vespino in the masculine, it's lav dafka, and really, by most animals, you don't have a way of knowing who the father really is. So therefore, we're really only concerned that you shouldn't shech the mother and the progeny on the same day. Vein shoch den ha'avim abein im anu makirin oso. So if we know for sure who the father is, which animal the father is, then you're not allowed to even check the father and the offspring on the same day because of this shaila that maybe we're choshesh lezerahav. If you held like the Rif that for sure we're not worried about the paternal lineage of an animal, then you'd be allowed l'chatchila to check the father and the child on the same day because by animals there's no paternal relationships. There's only maternal relationships. Ule'inyan harba'a v'charisha v'anhaga zayim zeh. This applies also to interbreeding. And of course, there's also the prohibition. One of the prohibitions of kilayim is that you're not allowed to plow with two different species at the same time. Losachrosh bashor v'chamor yachtav. You're not allowed to plow with an ox and a donkey at the same time. So it applies to do different species as well. There are lots of different issues of kilayim. One's, of course, the shatnez that we wear. It applies to animals and to breeding. It applies to planting also. Those are kilayim. So ein choshishin lezerah ha'av lios nechshav min echadim ha'ben kol zman shehe ha'em min acher. So this is the same thing that basically you shouldn't be choshish for the zerah ha'av. But l'chumra, you are. This whole discussion, Maseches Chulin, in that perek, and this is the basic conclusion. So the Gemara gives signs where you could tell a mule from a hinny, and so the Sefer Chinuch says, obviously, if the mother is the same, so and it's a mule or a hinny, so it has to be the father being the opposite. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a mule, it would be a purebred. U'yeser prati ha-mitzvah maseches kilayim. The rest of the details is in the tractate kilayim. V'nohegis b'chol makom v'chol zman, b'zchar munakevos, in all places and all times, with males and females. V'over aleha v'hir bia kilayim, v'hu sheikhnez v'chol b'shoferes lo k'minatar. Again, if you actually insert the genitalia, then you receive the penalty of lashes. But if you do another action to actively encourage the animals to mate, as opposed to just leaving them together alone, then you receive the rabbinic penalty of makas mardus, rabbinic lashes. The Sefer Chinuch mentions over here that it applies even if you don't pick it up and stick it, you know, together, then that would be... It would still be a problem if you used your voice to encourage them along. Hey donkey, come over here, you know. Come on. Nice donkey. Look at this nice horse. It's so, you know. That would be a problem, at least midrabanan. Okay.
Can you do it in a language that other than what the donkey is bred to understand?
Even if you whistle, it will be a problem. If you whistle and draw the donkey's attention to the horse or vice versa, then that would be still prohibited. Mitzvah Reish Mem Hei. Let's get started on this. Another issue of Kilayim. The rest of the issues of Kilayim, by the way, will be reserved for Parshas Kiseitze, where they're mentioned again. Parshas Kiseitze has a repetition of a lot of mitzvahs. So there we're going to talk about chatnas of clothing and other issues of planting plants together. So, okay, we were just talking about animals. Now we're going to start talking about plants. Shelo lizroa kilei zroim velo narkiv ilon b'shum makom ba'aretz. So the prohibition of kilei zroim, which is planting different species of seeds together, and applies also to trees. How does it apply to trees? That you're not allowed to graft one part of one tree onto a different species of tree. Okay, Zev Rechenech is going to explain. An apple tree and an orange tree.
Oh.
Not allowed to graft them.
Grapefruit and an
esrog. Oh, an esrog, yes. That's the problem. If you do two species of esrog, so I think it's
but
not...
It's Moroccan and not Israeli.
Wait a minute. Oh, right, the trees applies outside. We'll see. You're very good. You picked up on that, but that's not... that applies only to the actual planting. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll discuss more about esrog.
So Luther Burbank is totally out.
But shalom l'Israel shnei min ezraim. Not to plant two different types of seeds. Gigon chita u'seora. Like wheat and barley, opul va'adosha, or bean and lentil biyachad. Beretz Yisrael davka, it only applies in the land of Israel. Shenemar sod cholos yizrak kilayim. You shall not plant your field kilayim. And we know that even if we own stuff outside the land of Israel, it's not really ours to the same extent that it would be in the land of Israel. Uba perush alav shebesoda shiyalanu ba'aretz hakasu v'daver. Has it specifically in Eretz Yisrael that our tradition is that it's only in Eretz Yisrael that the prohibition of planting different seeds together applies, but not outside the land of Israel. So you have a Jewish farmer, then he has many fewer restrictions than he would in Eretz Yisrael. If you want to be a farmer in Eretz Yisrael, you have to beef up on all the halachas that you have to know of all these things. Shemitah, Kilayim, Trumas and Maestras, all these things you have to know that you totally are oblivious in Chutz Aretz. Mishor Shea Mitzvah, the reasoning of the Mitzvah, Kosavti Mashidati, the Mitzvah Kodemes, Rechen Mitzvahs Mechashefa, Beseder Mishpate, Mitzvahs Losase, Hey. So with the reason of not prohibition of interbreeding and mixing different species is the same as by the animals. And he didn't mention this as explicitly, but he also referenced the mitzvah of Mechashefa in Mishpatim. Remember, what the Sefer Chinuch says is that the power of the sorcery is that they mix different things together that don't belong in the Bria. And that's why we find very stringent regulations of how to deal with these types of things. That they, even if it's some actual power that they have, it's not appropriate for to mess with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creations. Midini ha-mitzvah, the halachas are as follows. Masha amr zichronam levracha, Chazal tell us, she'echad ha-zoreya ve'echad ha-menakesh o ha-mechape be'ofer. So anything that's planting-like. So even if you actually put the seeds into the ground, and one is if you weed the field to make sure that the kilayim grows better, or if you cover them with earth, even if the two seeds just fall on the ground by themselves, and you take earth, you put it on top of them, that is also the prohibition of planting kilayim. Kulan bichlal zriya hein lilkos alein, you receive the penalty of lashes. Bein shechipa osan biyado biraglo afilo bikli. So it doesn't have to be specifically with your hand, it could be with your foot, it could be even with a vessel. How is for to prepare the seeds. I prepare the land, I'm sorry, to receive the seeds, but that even if you cover it over as well, then it would also receive the penalty of lashes. You don't say something like in Shabbos, where if you do the malacha not in the normal manner, then you don't receive the full biblical penalty. So that's not the case. Any way that the seed gets covered is a problem. So we have an interesting principle in halacha that if you have a potted plant, and you have a hole in the bottom of the pot, and it's outside, sitting on the ground, then it's considered to be attached to the ground, halachically.
If there's a hole in the bottom.
But unless
there's a plate underneath.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is how you get around Shemitah if you grow plants.
Okay.
So if we ever make Aliyah, you're going to see lots and lots of pots with plates underneath.
Uh-huh.
But what is the question?
A potted plant is... a separate entity from what grows in the ground. So if...
So it's not... Shemitah doesn't apply.
Right.
If I lived in Israel every 7 years, I'd have to watch everything die. You know, because you can't tend to your plants in the Shemitah year. I mean, there are answers, but it's a big deal.
Put saucers under them.
Right, so you have... there's in Halacha, there's a, if it applies to Shabbos, also a lot of different nafkaminas. If you have an otzitz nokov or an otzitz she'enu nokov, if you have a potted plant with a hole in the bottom or not with a hole in the bottom. If you have a potted plant without a hole in the bottom, then if it's not considered attached to the ground, there are many restrictions.
Hydroponics.
Right.
As it were.
So that, there are abundant restrictions to an otzitz she'enu nokov, even if the the potted plant doesn't have a hole in the bottom. But if it has a hole in the bottom, that's absolutely d'oraisa considered to be, if it's on the ground, sitting on the ground.
Suppose it's on your fence or on your porch,
No, if it's sitting.
It's not on the ground.
No, it doesn't. No, it has to be above the ground at least. It has to. There's a shaila about hydroponics, by the way, what the bracha is. If it's something grows in an otzit sheino nokov, is the bracha lori priho adama.
What kind of
so some poskim say that hydroponics or things that grow in an otzit sheino nokov is a shahakal.
Sure.
Because it's not priho adama.
Okay.
But there is earth in the
simple,
pot.
Right, but it's still not considered attached. It has to be mamish in the ground. So that's not the normally accepted opinion because, A, it's exactly the same species. How could you be mechalic? It's a species is basically a priha adama. It's fruit of the earth. And second, also, there's the Gemara says explicitly that if wheat grows in an otzit she'enu nakuv, so it's kosher for matzah, to make matzah out of it. So if you can say hamotzi lechem min haaretz, so even if it's otzit, even if it's a potted plant, then it's still kosher. That's
the class
the proof.
Of which it is a member is generally
right. So that's I think I heard the Rav's father, Moshe Soloveitchik, was quoted as bringing that proof that hydroponics should be the regular bracha because you see even that matzah is kosher if the wheat was grown in otzit she'enu nakuv. Umash amru she'ein osur mishum kilei zroim el azroim haruim lemaichel adam. So the whole prohibition of kilayim in this case, only applies to seeds that grow plants that are for human consumption. But if you have plants that are inedible, even if they're used for medications, so they could be consumed by humans in some fashion, if it's not the derech achila, if they're not used for food purposes, so it's not considered kilayim. V'chilei ha'ilanos. Harehen bichlal lavze shel sod chalos izra kilayim. So there is kilayim vis-a-vis trees as well as seeds. How so? V'omnam eino iser bichilei ha'ilanos ela derech hakava. The prohibition does not apply. If you plant an apple tree, and if you take an apple tree seed, and you take a wheat seed, right, and you hold it together, and you plant it together, that's not a problem.
Why?
Because it only applies to two types of seeds.
What do you mean?
Wait a
like things that are we would call prihadama. It doesn't apply to prihaitz.
Oh,
so it doesn't apply to trees. It only applies to plants that are eaten in a non-tree manner.
Okay.
So if you have, so that's not a problem. But where it does come into play, the prohibition of kilayim vis-a-vis trees is grafting. That grafting is not allowed. Kegon shehirkiv yichor shel tapuach be'esrog. You graft a apple tree onto a citron tree, which is normally the opposite, because the reason they graft esrog trees onto other trees is because it's a shvacha tree, that esrog trees are hard to tend to. There are two different species. So we have the famous shaila come by an esrog, if an esrog is kosher at all, if it's been grafted. So the accepted tradition in Psak is that if an esrog has been grafted, then you're not allowed to use it for the mitzvah anymore, even though it's the same species. Because once you graft, because al pi halacha, we know that genetically, when you graft, it doesn't change the DNA of the fruit, but if you graft part of an esrog onto an esrog tree onto another type of tree, even if it's a different citrus tree, so it could be that certain types of citrus trees would be mutter, because al pi halacha, they'd be the same species for grafting. But nevertheless, it's not a pure esrog, so therefore it's not allowed. Some people say if you graft it onto a tree that you're not really supposed to graft it onto, then it's usher because even though you're allowed to eat it, it's considered to be, since you did, there was some sort of sin that went on with this esrog, so you're not allowed to use it for the mitzvah. There is a very minority opinion that does not, that allows the use of a grafted esrog, but the accepted tradition is that we do not allow the use of a grafted esrog for the mitzvah. That's why people try to get an esrog with good yichus, that's what they call it. They have to, so you have to make sure that it comes from a tradition of benach or benach or ben of plants that were never grafted in order to make sure that the esrog is completely pure. There is an opinion that things that were planted from an esrog that was grafted are kosher for the mitzvah, which makes sense because it doesn't change the DNA. Doesn't change the DNA. So even if there's some effect on the actual esrog right now from the tree onto which it was grafted, once you take those seeds and then you plant them, so it's going to be a pure esrog. There's not going to be any problem with that. So there's some shittas hold that that would be okay. It's only if the esrog actually comes from the... We try to be machmir that we don't even take from a toldas murkav. We try to get esrogim that have a good yichus. That's why people try to, you know, look very carefully for the type of esrog that they want. Whether they want a Yemenite esrog, which they have a strong tradition that was never grafted, or they want different things. Or a Chazonish type of esrog. The Chazonish went around Eretz Yisrael and he tried to find the trees that were, that he felt that were the least likely to be grafted, and he tried to make the use their use widespread, because he felt they were more reliable than the regular esrogim on the market in Israel. Apparently, they brought the Chazonish an esrog from the regular esrogim that were on the market in Eretz Yisrael at the time. So they said to him, "We know that you like your esrogim better. I understand you like your esrogim better. So, but I want to know: is this esrog lemaisa? Is this esrog kosher?" So he said, "Af kompot."
For kompot.
To use for kompot, yes, it's kosher. So they thought he was being facetious. So then they said, "Albert McKen machen a bracha, but can you make a bracha on it?" He says, "Bori pri haitz." So he says he really, Chazanish felt very strongly against grafted esrogim, even esrogim that might have been descended from the grafted trees. He felt were still a problem. That's why he tried to get esrog with that has a good pedigree.
How do you do this?
You have to find though the species.
The regular, the ordinary consumer who goes to the bookstore or the B'nai Akiva.
You hope it's good. You hope it's good. They have a cheskes kashrus. You don't know for sure it's been grafted, so it has a cheskes kashrus. But the truth is that, you know, a lot of discerning consumers want specific species of esrogim. Either some people take Moroccan esrogim or Yemenite or Chazanish or Braverman, which is another species of everything that was used by the Jews of Eretz Yisrael about 150 years ago. Yeah. So those are probably the ones that are stam on the market around. I'm not saying they're not kosher, but the reason that those are the most widespread is not because they have the best pedigree, it's because they look the nicest. Mm-hmm. If you go to a store that has specialty esrogim, Chaznish variety, Yemenite, Moroccan, all these ancestrally good pedigree esrogim, they're harder to take care of, and they're not consistently as good looking. So that's why they're not as popular. But I don't understand. If all you have is the regular esrog, that's the regular Israeli esrog that's sold in the store, so okay, so it's cheskes kashrus, so it's good. But I'm saying, well, if you could choose, okay, it doesn't look quite as nice, so take one with a better pedigree. I never exactly understood.
So what is hodor actually?
Aval derech zriya. Okay, let's just finish this paragraph. Aval derech zriya ki only zroa zera ilanim zroim davar ze mutar afil lechatchila. But you're allowed to plant a tree with other types of species of plants lechatchila. Chutz min hakerim, this does not apply to vineyards. Kemosh nefarish v'zeir ki seitzei lav yud bezras Hashem. That there are more stringent rules that apply to a vineyard as opposed to an orchard of another type of tree. And we'll continue with this.